my very good friends who moved here from Romania, I had the opportunity to, on behalf of child welfare when I was head of the state agency, to go to Romania to look at their orphanage system and develop some friendships there that exist today. About a year after I returned, some friends who have become really close friends moved from Romania to the United States, and they're here this morning, Marian Babinac and her son Radu. My sister Gloria, who's been with me my lifetime, she's older than I. And some very good sister girlfriends in the back there, Joan Brown Klein and Phyllis Spalding, not to be known as Paulson. And I'm going to ask my management team to please stand. At Volunteers of America, we've had one remarkable 10-year period. And the only reason we've had that is because I have this fabulous team of managers and this forward-thinking staff that gets the job done. And the senior managers are here. Please stand, all of you. To my right is Glenn Fung, who's our chief financial officer. Here is Tim Winner, who's my chief operating officer. Pam Kelly, who's my division director for rehabilitation services. And Paul Hickman, who's my director for our enterprise operation. We are really unique as a nonprofit because we have an enterprise operation to help subsidize the work that we do. Is there anyone else that I missed?
Kim and the grandkids.
Mom.
Where?
Kim and the grandkids.
Oh, by all means. Where is Allie and Joshua? I don't see them.
And Kimberly.
Allie, Joshua, please come forward. These are my grandchildren, my 12-year-old granddaughter, who's in the 7th grade at Catlin Gable, and my 9-year-old grandson, Joshua, who is
all right. Okay, I think you have someone from UP that's here.
Yes, Father Doyle. If I can't see you, I can't see you. Father Doyle is the executive vice president from the University of Portland. My niece, Kimberly Stelling, Kimberly Brown Stelling. And also, I saw Laurie, I don't see her at the moment, but Laurie Kelly, who's from the Public Relations Department at the University of Portland.
Very nice.
If I missed anyone, please stand. Anyway, thank you for being here. It's quite an honor for this to occur, and it's quite an honor for you to be here with me this morning. I'm just going to make a couple of remarks because oftentimes, thank you first. Thank you to the mayor, Commissioner Fish, and to the Portland City Council for honoring me in this way. I was really surprised about a week ago when I was meeting with Commissioner Fish on board business, and he says, are you going to be in the chambers on the 19th? And I said, for what? And he said that this was going to happen. I was really surprised for two reasons. One, I never expect anything like this. I just do the work that I do because I care. But what really surprised me is that everybody on my staff knew about it, and they were keeping this surprise. And I always like to believe that I'm in the know and what's going on in my own organization. This one, I didn't know. But, you know, oftentimes people ask me why social work and why public service. And there's a real clear reason for me in terms of why I have spent 30 years doing what I do. First, I have these fabulous parents who instilled, who inculcated, who modeled caring for others. You know, the motto was care for self, care for the family, care for the children, care for the community. And that imprint definitely has influenced my choices and my life. But what has been my experience is that as I've approached this work, to work with those most vulnerable, those most in need, what I have to say to this, to you, and to all those who may be listening, is that public service and social work have made a huge difference in the lives of so many people. It's very disconcerting when I hear people attack government because government has made the difference in so many of our lives. I'm here today. I was able to work for the governor of the state of Oregon coming right out of Albina because government, the courts, gave me an opportunity to pursue my dream. So my message to all of those who are listening is that government is not the problem. Government is a solution. And if we work together, And if we work together, even if we have disagreements, we can make all of our lives considerably better. And we all have this responsibility during this economic downturn to care for those who may be for the first time be experiencing a need for help. We need to do it with care, we need to do it with love, and we need to do it with compassion. And as we do that, I'm going to challenge everyone to do this. Please bring a little joy into your lives as we go through this very difficult period of time. Read a poem, sing a song, dance a jig, teach a child. Because if you are tapping into that place where you are joyful, you will make the lives of those that you touch also joyful, as you have for me today. Thank you so much for bringing joy to my life.
And I'd also like to thank Myla Greisen of my team, who was part of the Conspiracy K. And Myla, thank you for all your great work. I really appreciate it.
You are welcome to stay, but you're not. We will not be offended if you've got we other work to do. That opens up communications, right? Yeah. Well, yes. Kind of. Why don't I do communicate? Do you have people here? Why don't I do communication so these people have a chance to leave? It's a little close to there. All right. Sue, we're going to tackle council communications and then do our second proclamation. So if you could please read the title for council communications, item number 1148.
1148, request of Ulysses Hardiman to address council regarding towed vehicle.
Mr. Hardiman, good morning. Welcome back to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Please have a seat. And we just need your first and last name, and the clock in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes.
Okay. Ulysses Hardiman, good morning, Your Honor. Glad to see the sun shining better on you, too, and I heard your announcements the other day.
Thank you.
Fritz Salzman. Separately, I've addressed this August Assembly. You know, I don't know if you guys know it or not, you're pretty intimidating. I mean, I think about the ability and the controls you have and whatnot, and hopefully they'll come out nicely, you know, and you don't. I mean, I know my mama loved me, you know, but sometimes things didn't come out the way I wanted them to, and you know. But I've asked you and asked you to help me in a situation in which my car was. I reviewed the city charter. I reviewed the Constitution of the State of Oregon, the U.S. Constitution. The car should not have been towed. For convenience of the neighborhood, because of the sheer width of the car, I deliberately had the car parked where one side of it, the entire driving wheel, is off of the public pavement, although one wheel was on the public pavement. Then we say, well, we towed your car because you owed us money, you know. My friends don't want me to sue the city, and I don't want to sue the city either, and it's going to be a difficult thing for me if I do choose to sue the city. I found out later on that apparently at the first session I could have been advised by someone that there is an agency in town that conducts toll hearings. I didn't hear about that until later. But I'm hoping that steps will be taken and return my property to me. But according to my timeline, what I was been doing, I use my car, I do some junking and some scrapping, and then I get to my job. I work through Remedy, I work through DePaul Industries, and several other companies like that temporarily. So then by the time I had got money, I got my insurance, tags, everything done, my driver's license. Now I was going to deliver pizzas and newspapers, and then I was going to buy me a hot dog cart. By now I should have had $3,500 to $4,000, had my hot dog cart, got my apartment. Instead, I'm flat broke. Just trying to recover this car. Hope the council will help me. If I may be so bold, allow me please to ask you for a postponement. I'll come back and address you at a later date. If you will help me, I hope that you will. I can always be communicated with by Mr. Jefferson, a long-term friend of mine. Thank you so much, and I hope things keep going great and glowing, and all your happy faces. It's always good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Hardiman. Appreciate it.
Good luck, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir. Sue, would you please read the council communications, item number 1149.
Request of David E. Delk to address council regarding instant runoff voting.
Mr. Delk, welcome back to the city council. Glad you're here. I think you know the rules. 3 minutes, and we only need your first and last name, no address today.
Okay. My name's David Delk. And first, I want to thank you for allowing me to speak with you this morning. I also want to thank Mayor Adams for testifying at the Department of Energy scoping meeting held last week. The U.S. Department of Energy is in the process of issuing an environmental impact statement regarding proposed long-term storage of mercury waste at Hanford. Thank you for representing the citizens of Portland and our concerns. I have included...
If I could interrupt you, just we'll give you a little bit more time. You brought that to my attention many months ago, so I want to return the thank you to you for raising the issue to my attention.
Good, thank you. Right. I have included information in the little packet I gave you in case the rest of you would like to comment. There's the comment information is on the last sheet. Hanford should be cleaned up first before additional waste is transported there. During the past three legislative sessions, Senator Jackie Dinkfelder, as well as Representatives Peter Buckley, Chip Shields, and others have introduced bills for local option instant runoff voting. We expect it to be reintroduced. Instant runoff voting is an alternative method of voting, which results in all winners being elected with a majority of the vote in a single election without the expense and extra time requirements of runoff. Also known as IRV. While IRV has not been used in Oregon, it is growing in popularity in other parts of the United States. Most notably, San Francisco has used IRV for three election cycles. Other California cities have approved the use of IRV, including Oakland, Berkeley, San Leandro, Davis, as well as Santa Clara County. Burlington, Vermont, Aspen, Colorado, Pierce County, Washington, Tacoma have now used IRV in their local elections. In 2008, the citizens of Memphis made their desire clear. 71% voted in favor in the use of IRV. I could go on with additional examples. However, I don't want to spend my time here convincing you that our city should use IRV. That discussion can happen in the future. What I do want to ask is that you support local option legislation. I'm not asking you to decide that you support IRV. Rather, I am asking you to support the right of local governments to use IRV if they so decide. Statewide elected officials have said that if local governments were to use IRV, that the state of Oregon would oppose that usage. Because of that, no local government has approved IRV use. In fact, in 2001, voters in Eugene turned down an opportunity because of the threat of state action if they so approved. Since that time, the city councils of Ashland and Corvallis have indicated that they would like to use IRV if they had the option, and the second page in the packet is a copy of the Ashland resolution. I am asking that each one of you write a letter or statement in support of local option IRV. Those letters can be written now so that when the legislature is con- is considered. We will have your letters to present. During the last session, Senator Devlin said that he would schedule a vote in the full Senate if we could get statements of support from local officials. We are now being proactive in getting those letters. I would be happy to assist in writing those letters. My contact information is included.
Great. Good. Thank you, Mr. Delk, very much. Appreciate it. Sue, would you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1150?
Request of Michael O'Gara to address Council regarding nuisance abatement budget.
Mr. O'Gara, welcome to the City Council.
Thank you very much.
Glad you're here. Just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock will help you count down your time.
Okay. Michael O'Gara, and I think you have a picture of what I'm discussing right there on LaVue Drive. I live on a small street in Southwest Portland, LaVue Drive, and we do not receive many of the basic city services, such as street cleaning and leaf removal, that other neighborhoods routinely receive. But the last few years, we've had a problem with people not maintaining their property, having brush and trees overgrowing and narrowing our street and covering the stop sign at the bottom of our street. In the past, other neighbors and I have called the nuisance abatement office, and they have notified the property owners, and they've taken care of the situation. However, one property has been a consistent problem, and this year has worsened to the point that our street is becoming impassable and dangerous to walk and drive on. This year, I notified Ed Mary Hart in the nuisance abatement department, and he and his inspectors have posted and cited the owner since mid-June with no response. From conversations with Mr. Maryhart, I found that the city has greatly reduced the abatement budget, and in most cases no longer is able to follow through and take care of the nuisance and then put a lien against the property as outlined in City Code 29. Without city support, our street is now narrowed to about 8 feet, as you can see in the photos. Branches hang down to 6 and 7 feet, and the stop sign at the bottom of the street was completely covered. Our street is a common route for walkers and bicyclists going between McAdam and Barber Boulevard. In fact, it's part of the Portland Trail 4, and it's used to avoid traffic on Taylor's Ferry Road. With cars, pedestrians, and bikes, and no sidewalks, the narrow end of our street is creating a very dangerous situation. I called Commissioner Leonard's office for assistance and have received less than a helpful response. Their only statement was there have been budget cuts and they're not abating nuisances anymore. I then spoke with the city ombudsman, and he realized the seriousness of the stop sign issue and arranged for city workers to take care of that, and that has been cleared. But it seems that the city, with budget cuts, they could do a better job of allocating resources. When city workers came out to do the stop sign, they probably could have moved up the street and removed the rest of the nuisance. I understand that Commissioner Leonard's office knows of the budget cuts, and now they've told me of the budget cuts. But somehow the trees on my street have not been notified of the budget cuts, and they continue to grow. I see two things happening to the city does not step in to abate nuisances. Last year, there were 7,000 complaints, which led to 350 nuisance abatements. It won't take long if 350 nuisances are not cleaned up to negatively impact the safety and livability of our city. In addition, when people realize there will be no consequence to ignoring the citations, I think the number of dangerous and unsanitary situations will increase. And secondly, I think neighbors may start to confront neighbors with nuisances, leading to hard feelings at best and violent confrontations at worst. Now, I realize our city is facing budget cuts, but I think oftentimes when I see some of the different issues that you deal with, I would think that they could maybe allocate resources in a better way. I do have some potential, I realize my time is closing down, but I do have some potential solutions. When new revenues come in, such as the new parking fees downtown, I think they should be used to replace existing programs that have been cut rather than new programs. I read in the newspaper like $500,000 of anticipated parking revenue will be going to new bike pedestrian paths and a cycle track at PSU. As a lifelong bicycle commuter, I appreciate the interest in bike paths, but would rather have existing streets kept open and safe. I think if we could give workers the discretion to approach more than one thing at a time, you know, urban forestry, which I contacted, transportation, and nuisance abatement, if they could overlap some of the responsibilities when they're doing one, maybe take care of another, it might be a more efficient system. In closing, I just ask you the same question I asked Mayor, and I realize this isn't a dialogue, but I'd just like to ask you this question. If the property owner will not or cannot correct a dangerous nuisance, and the city does not enforce their policies in abating the nuisance, and as a citizen impacted by the nuisance, I have no legal right to go onto private property, how are these issues going to get resolved and not continue to escalate?
Well, why didn't the property owner clean this up, just out of curiosity? You don't know?
I don't know. They've been notified, they've been cited, they've had letters sent out, they've been threatened. And they haven't. This has been an ongoing problem for several years, but in the past they've kind of trimmed it back to a slight
standard.
Mayor,
I have an idea. Since you mentioned the urban forestry, which it technically falls within my purview as Parks Commissioner, and we work very closely with PBOT, which is the Mayor's Bureau, I think we can have the P PBOT and Urban Forestry can have a conversation about this and get back to you. And okay. I would like to know from Urban Forestry what we can do.
Okay, because I will say that I talked to Dan Anderson in the mayor's office, and he was the one that referred me and was very helpful in referring me and tried to come up with some alternate strategies. And I did talk to Urban Forestry, but they felt it was not in their jurisdiction. So that was that's why I said I was hoping that maybe some of these overlapping things, they could take care of some of these issues.
Brush clean, I mean, we do have financial difficulties where we don't keep up. We don't have the resources to keep up on the stuff we're responsible for in the public right of way, much less in the private side. However, the budget cuts that we've had to face are for a variety of different reasons, mostly the economy, and we hope that they'll come back. I appreciate you raising this issue so that we can, you know, take another look at it in the budget process and see what we can do.
Okay. And in the case of my street, will someone from Urban Forestry be contacting me? Or I mean, in another year, our street will be closed.
We face this all over the city right now. So,
But what should happen? I guess that's the thing. If our street's closed, what do we do?
Commissioner Fritz?
I think there's a bigger question in nuisance abatement, and we did put general fund money into nuisance abatement. I'd like to get more information when Commissioner Leonard returns about how we fund nuisance abatement in the Bureau of Development Services, because I think there are some other funds that go into that program beyond the general fund, and I think maybe before the next budget session, the council needs to take another look, perhaps, at the issue of how we fund nuisance abatement. Because there are going to be situations where property owners don't respond to the initial notice, and there's a public service needed in taking care of those issues.
You also, you would clean this up if you were given access, right?
Well, I've had legal right. I mean, someone probably in our neighborhood.
Let me finish.
Okay.
So part of what I see here is this, that we haven't explored before, that this conversation just prompts on my part is, a lot of these trees are in the public right-of-way, so we should check with the city attorney if volunteers want to remove brush from the public right-of-way, even though it starts growing on someone else's private property. Could a volunteer effort do that? I think I'm trying to think of practical things that you can do.
I did want to say, though, the neighbor across the street where it says private property on the picture, he has a lawn service, and he did talk to the property owner about trimming it back, and they in no uncertain terms told him to stay off their property.
Right, and so I'm just looking at your picture here, and there's plenty of the offending brush. There's plenty of offending leaves that are in the public right-of-way. Maybe we can do something about that. Again, I'm trying to offer some practical stuff.
Right, I understand
that. So, Mayor, here's what I think we can commit to. The Urban Forestry Division is responsible to me, will in fact take a look at this and within 2 weeks get back to you.
Okay.
And we'll find out what we can do. We will touch base with the mayor's office and with Commissioner Fritz, and we will have some kind of response, and I will personally follow through with you on
it. I really appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Thank you,
thanks,
sir.
Seal, Philip.
Yeah, I'll take
it. All right. Can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1151?
Request of Mary Stockton to address Council regarding method of funding public services.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Are you Ms. Phillips?
I am.
And Ms. Stockton?
Right.
Glad you're here. We normally have people come up one at a time, but because you're both wearing those buttons, I'm going to take chair's prerogative and let you both come up together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Glad you're here. We'll need first and last name, and that clock on that big hunk of wood will help you count down your time.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Marty Stockton.
My name is Charlotte Phillips.
I proudly work as a city planner for the Bureau of Development Services. My bureau is slated to cut its staff in half by October 1st. This extreme reduction in personnel will prevent us from delivering basic services. I am making the following requests. Please support the employees of BDS. Find emergency funding to stop the layoff process immediately and change the funding of BDS to more accurately reflect the essential core services provided that are not funded by fees. The BDS mission is to promote safety, livability, and economic vitality through efficient and collaborative application of building and development codes. To fulfill this goal, BDS planners staff a development services center. where we review over-the-counter permits for a variety of projects. We process hundreds of land use applications. These functions are fee-based. What is not covered by fees is the essential frontline public service we provide, guiding property owners, neighborhood associations, and developers through complex zoning regulations and city policies. We staff the zoning hotline, where we respond to over 100 phone calls a day. We are often the first voice or face of the city of Portland to a citizen. At present, the funding structure of BDS is currently 95% fee-based and 5% general fund. In good economic times, this method works, and a pool of reserves was meant to be a safety net for the Bureau to weather economic downturns. That safety net is gone, but there's still work to be done, as our permit numbers are just down 20%. Unfortunately, it's the permit fees from larger commercial projects that are down, which have been significantly subsidizing residential projects. Our Bureau is shouldering a disproportionate brunt of this recession, and we believe there is a genuine need to implement systemic changes in BDS's funding and organization. For this reason, it is time we review the funding structure to establish greater stability and quality of service. Please consider a 60% fee base along with a 40% general fund ratio method of funding. 16 of our talented coworkers lost their jobs on July 31st, while another 22 were frantically transferred to other bureaus. We are in the process of losing another 111 people by the end of September. The BDS layoffs are not insular, and jobs classifications are not bureau-specific. Seniority rights are citywide. As a result, the bumping scenarios have caused major distractions in BDS and will bring inevitable disruptions to several other bureaus, including the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the Bureau of Environmental Services. While there have been reorganization brainstorming sessions, there is currently no known plan on how to maintain the basic functions of BDS such that we are able to effectively fulfill obligations mandated by the state of Oregon. If there was ever a time for emergency funding to stop the hemorrhaging and maintain citizen confidence in the city that works, it is now. In conclusion, the public have come to rely upon a quality of services that we at the Bureau of Development Services provide. We must continue to provide these services. Our citizens' safety, nationally recognized livability, and economic recovery of the city depend on it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Good morning. I am here before you today to share the scope and importance of the services we provide to the citizens of Portland and ask for your support to continue these services. The goal statement of BDS is to promote safety, livability, economic vitality through efficient and collaborative application of building and development codes. It has noble intent. Let's take a look at the meaning of the statement. To promote safety, plans examiners review plans for code compliance from egress windows in single-family dwellings to complex exiting in tall commercial buildings. We take the worry out of sending your children to the movies, knowing that exiting is provided should there be an emergency. During a typical week last month, plans examiner, structural engineers, and support staff returned 200 phone calls relating to code questions, design criteria, and permit issuance and related fees. We helped 600 architects, designers, business and homeowners with code and policy questions. We solved numerous problems that they brought to us. Our citizens have come to rely on us for code expertise and interpretation. Building inspectors performed 2,900 inspections. They help solve issues that arise in the field, working with homeowners, subcontractors, and contractors, finding solutions to comply with the intent of the code. Our city relies on the reviews and inspections of BDS. To promote livability, providing access for all of our citizens to public parks, buildings, and facilities is an important part of our review process. We help building owners provide accessible housing, restroom facilities, hotel rooms, counters and seating in stores, restaurants, movie theaters, sports arenas, for the citizens with mobility, vision, and hearing impairments. We review and inspect accessibility to parks, picnic tables, and benches, so every citizen has an opportunity to enjoy our beautiful city. To promote economic vitality, we review and issue permits that provide growth for new and existing businesses, thereby providing new jobs for our citizens. BDS is funded by fees collected from permits that we issue. The large buildings are the backbone of our revenue base. Currently, our revenues are down by 68%, yet our workload is down by 22%. The small projects do not generate sufficient funds to pay for the review and inspection time. It often takes more time to review a small remodel or addition than to review an entire house because of the complexities of the structural changes and unknown factors. Marty and I are here today to ask for your help in continuing to provide the level of service that BDS staff has worked so long and hard to provide to the citizens of Portland. We are more than just a permit center. We are a group of the group responsible to help our citizens be informed, understand codes, and comply with the codes that provide safety, livability, and economic vitality to our city. Thank you for your time today. We look forward to your support to continue the services we provide.
Well, I'm going to thank you for your testimony, and I want to acknowledge the very difficult circumstances in your bureau and the continuing need for work and success and towards the mission of your bureau. This city council does not make these decisions lightly. We actually cut 144 positions in other parts of the city, but because of an earlier freeze on new hires, we were able to accomplish that mostly with cutting positions that therefore were then vacant. The chances are we'll be cutting budgets again next year, and that is not a task that we take lightly. And we'll continue to, as we do the interim budget reports for the council, continue to look at every opportunity to retain the great talent that we have and to also find places elsewhere in the city to make sure that we keep that talent within the city family, if not within the bureau. But we understand that these are families that are impacted, great people, and it's a very difficult situation, and we will continue to do everything we can to try to be as compassionate in this difficult time as possible. So thank you for continuing to, and encourage you to continue to advocate, and we'll continue to look for every creative way to be as helpful as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
Yep. So we have a second special item for the City Council, and that is an additional proclamation. And I'd like to recognize Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
And I'd like to ask Rick Bastich at the Office of Healthy Working Rivers to come forward. This is our first proclamation since the Office of Healthy Working Rivers came into being at the beginning of July, and it celebrates Riverfest, which is coming up this weekend. Whereas the City of Portland has a vision for the river with programs, celebrations, and events that build awareness, educate, and inspire, and whereas the Willamette is a river of history and national significance and figures proudly in Oregon's 150 years of statehood, and whereas the Willamette has long been a river of commerce and is home to many river-dependent industries and the Port of Portland, the fourth largest on the West Coast by traded volume. And whereas the river is home to salmon and steelhead, its bridges to peregrine falcons, and its shores to bald eagles, osprey, and Portland city bird, which the city celebrates each year with Great Blue Heron Week. And whereas the river is lined with parks and public spaces that are the pride of Portlanders, including part of Ross Island, as well as the newly re-energized Ankeny Plaza and Bill Nato Legacy Fountain. And whereas the Freshwater Trust Portland Triathlon illustrates and celebrates a swimmable Willamette. And whereas the people of Portland are working to protect the Willamette and Columbia Rivers through improved watershed management, including the South Portland Riverbank Project, sustainable stormwater practices, new sewer systems, and what is known as the Big Pipe Project. And whereas the people of Portland are investing in such singular riverfront revitalization initiatives as Centennial Mills and South Waterfront, the nation's first salmon-safe urban neighborhood. And whereas the hard work in caring for and improving our rivers is far from done, and that protecting our rivers and revitalizing our riverfront will require the continued concentration and passion of all Portlanders. Now, therefore, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, does hereby proclaim August 20th through August 23rd, 2009, as Portland Riverfest Days in Portland, and encourage all residents to observe these days.
Thank you.
Rick, would you like to say a few words?
I would. I'd like to express my appreciation to the many bureaus that have cooperated in hosting Riverfest and invite everybody for a good time of river fun and learning down by the riverside over the next 4 days, and introduce Jeremy Solly, a partner in putting on Riverfest.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Solly with South Waterfront Community Relations. Thank you guys for acknowledging us. It's been a pleasure working with Rick over the past, maybe year, putting together Riverfest, and we hope everyone can come out and enjoy it this weekend.
And how can people find out information about all of the activities of Riverfest?
www.portlandriverfest.org.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz, if I could just say that you and I were in Multnomah Village over the weekend, and there was a tent with some information about Riverfest and about some tours. And someone admonished me for not having taken a tour. So I've signed up for a 5:15 on Friday, which I think is it's not the ceremonial part on Saturday, but for citizens who want to see the river, the habitat restoration work from Willamette Park south, there's an event, I think, at 5:15. So we've signed up, Emily Hicks and I, and we're looking forward to being guided by folks from your office and from BES.
And most of the events of this Riverfest are free, so we greatly encourage folks to come out. It's going to be a beautiful weekend, and everybody can enjoy our wonderful Willamette River. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. So we're going to consider the consent agenda. I would like to pull back 1158 and referred back to my office unless there are objections. Anyone else wish to pull an item?
Are you pulling 1153?
I am. That's a time certain. I'll do that next.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I missed what you just said.
I'd like to refer back to my office, council calendar item 1158. Do we need to... Can you read I don't need to read the title for 1158, do I, or do I?
Approve an agreement with the Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon to continue an experimental bus pass program for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability at the EcoTrust Building, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue, for FY 2009-2010.
Unless objection, 1158 is referred back to the mayor's office. Anyone else wish to pull any other item from the consent agenda? Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on the consent agenda? Sue, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda?
Salzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. I would like to make a motion to request a 6 p.m. time certain on September 16th, 2009, for a presentation from Youth Corps.
Second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Sue, would you please call the roll on this motion?
Saul Smith.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Motion is approved. Unless there are objections, I'd like to... pull council calendar item 1153 and refer it back. Set it over to time certain September 9th, 2009 at 10 a.m. Any objections? You want to read the title?
I should read the title. Amend Portland Transportation System Plan and Comprehensive Plan to update the Gateway Master Street Plan and Chapter 11 Master Street Plans.
So... moved to set over to September 9th, 2009, 10 a.m. All right, that gets us to the Council Calendar Item 1154. It's a time certain. Can you please read the title?
1154, authorize general fund resources to maintain, manage, and operate the Simon and Helen Director Park.
And Sue, can you also read what items?
55 and 56.
1155 and 1156 as well.
1155, authorize a condominium agreement with Fox Tower LLC for Director Park. 1156, recognize non-standard streetscape improvements along Southwest Park and 9th Avenues immediately adjacent to the city's new Simon and Helen Director Park, and affirm inter-bureau commitments of Portland Parks and Recreation and Portland Bureau of Transportation.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. And I just want to clarify, we have three matters before the council. Two are ordinances, one is a resolution. We will only be voting on the resolution. The ordinances will go over to a second reading. I have a brief introduction, but while I do so, I'd invite Eileen Argentina and Allison Rouse to come forward, and I will just try to set this up. I'm pleased to introduce a bundle of three items associated with Director Park. So why are we here? Today we will be considering two ordinances and one resolution that address the following issues. Number one, funding the operations and maintenance of the park. Number two, an agreement between Parks and Fox Tower LLC regarding management of the space both above and below the ground. And three, a memorandum of understanding between PBOT, Portland Bureau of Transportation, and Parks regarding the streets and parking revenue. Before I introduce our crack team from Parks, I'd like to thank three individuals and organizations. The first is the Moyer family, which generously contributed the land to the city. Second, Jordan Schnitzer, whose generosity allowed us, who has contributed substantial purse private resources, and the park will be, in fact, named in honor of a member of his extended family. And three, the Portland Parks Foundation, that does such a great job leveraging the private resources we need to match with our public resources. I look back over the figures on this park, and I was heartened that if you add up all of the resources that we anticipate expending, both in terms of the acquisition of the property and the development and construction, approximately 60% of the cost will be borne by private citizens and organizations. And that is an enviable mark and something that we hope to build on in the future, because the truth is we just don't have adequate resources to meet the growing demand for new parks and infrastructure. But thanks to the generosity of people like the Moyers and Jordan Schnitzer and the ongoing work of the Parks Foundation, we're able to leverage an enormous amount of private money to supplement the public resources. I'd also like to recognize the property owners and especially the retailers who have been exceptionally patient with the disruption caused by a large construction project of this type, and in particular to Art Media and to Elephant's Deli and the Real Mother Goose and others. We know it's been a long slog, and you have been extremely gracious and patient with us. I'm here to tell you, though, that the end is near, that we expect to have this project completed and opened this fall, and we are confident that when it is up and running, we will be drawing enormous numbers of people to the park and, by extension, to the various businesses that have been supporting our work. But thank you for hanging in there with us every step of the way. Now I'd like to introduce Eileen Argentina and Allison Rouse with Parks, and they have a very brief presentation on this matter.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Eileen Argentina. I'm the Services Manager for Portland Parks and Recreation. An extraordinary new downtown park is about to be put into service, and we're in the home stretch getting all of the necessary pieces in place to ensure the park is a fantastic success right off the bat. Towards that end, as the Commissioner mentioned, we have three items for your consideration today. I'd like to provide a little more detail regarding these items, and Allison Rouse, the project manager, will brief you on the progress of the park and the unique circumstances surrounding the operation of it. First item is an ordinance to authorize general fund resources to maintain, manage, and operate the park. You should have received copies of the operating plan, which lays out the level of service and represents the vision for how this park will become a vital piece of the downtown core. PPNR has worked closely with OMF to determine how best to implement this for the current fiscal year and in future years. The second item is an ordinance authorizing a condominium agreement with Fox Tower LLC. This is not a condo as you might think of it in residential terms. Rather, this is a condo of two units. We own the park above, and Fox Tower LLC owns the garage below. The interface between the garage below and the park above will be managed through a condominium agreement that provides clear procedures for coordination and decision-making. And the third item is a resolution to recognize the extension of the park's materials across the rights-of-way and to affirm the interbureau commitments of Portland Parks and Recreation and the Portland Bureau of Transportation. The granite paving and special furnishings of this unique park now run across the public right-of-way such that on occasion the community gathering space can be expanded as needed to take advantage of the streetscape. The resolution will also ensure that the Bureau of Transportation's budget is kept whole since some on-street vehicle parking has been eliminated in the interest of security and pedestrian comfort. Catherine Levine from the Bureau of Transportation is here also to answer any questions you may have about this item. These are only the latest in a series of council decisions on this project. Prior council actions are described in Attachment A of the first ordinance. This is a park that, as the commissioner indicated, is so much more than the sum of its parts. It's been made possible through the council's support, innovative financing, and the generosity of several key players. Your actions today will ensure that the park achieves the vision, serves the community, and enhances Portland's vitality. I'll now turn it over to Allison so you can get a clearer sense of where we are on our newest urban plaza.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eileen, and thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Allison Rouse. I'm the project manager for Director Park. I'd first like to update you on the progress at the park. This image was taken near Flying Elephants, looking across the plaza up toward the cafe building, which you can see tucked under the canopy. In the foreground are some of the granite steps and the curved fountain wall. This slide looks back from the cafe down the plaza toward Nordstrom. At right, you see one of the garage entry buildings and four of the many bike stables in the plaza. In the background, you can see just how small the park really is. Max is running down Yamhill on the northern edge, and the crane in the background gives you an idea of how tall the new tower will feel once it's built. This slide is a shot of the street construction going on right now. It looks south along 9th Avenue towards Starbucks and the hotel. Again, this prompts a thank you from me and everyone at PPR to the retailers in the area who have been very gracious in this regard. Note the pedestrian walkway at right and the large number of utilities encountered in the right-of-way. At left, you can see a portion of a concrete slab that supports the granite paving. We will keep pedestrian access open throughout construction by routing them across these concrete slabs as they're poured and as paving progresses. Next, I'd like to provide some context for you as you consider the three items before you today. There are an array of important relationships that figured in development of the operations and maintenance budget. This is a diagram of the four main components of the park's operations plan. At top left is, of course, maintenance of the asset, both short-term and long-term maintenance. Below that is security, which is essential to the well-being of park users, but also to minimizing graffiti and vandalism, which helps to minimize the maintenance burden. At lower right is programming, which plays an important dual role. It reduces security expense by increasing positive activity, and done creatively, it helps bring visitors to downtown who might not otherwise come into the area. In this way, it also helps reduce maintenance via keeping the balance of activity in the park positive. And finally, at upper right are partnerships. This refers not only to the many commitments that already exist resulting from development of the plaza, but also the relationships that will be necessary or beneficial into the future. Now, you all recall from our previous visits the great number of partners responsible for creation of the park. This image illustrates an array of commitments that bear upon operation of the park. The top two spaces represent two of the items before you today. The condominium agreement with TMT, which documents property management arrangements vis-a-vis the garage and the park, and the MOU with PBOT, which does the same for the non-standard street materials. At the bottom are two more agencies with investments in the park, RAC, which has the public art piece, and the Water Bureau, who will manage and maintain the fountain. At right are our donors who made the park possible and who we expect will watch closely to see if the park is maintained. and the park's staff who are charged with making the whole endeavor a success. Finally, at left are our core constituency, park visitors, and the downtown community. These are the people whom we hope will come downtown, visit the park, and relax there. For them, the plaza must be kept clean, safe, and active. In summary, the plaza and how well it functions in its dense, sometimes rowdy environment is important to all of these parties, and the three items before you today will be crucial to the success or failure. So on schedule, we do expect, as the commissioner said, to complete the streetscapes. We will open those to vehicular circulation at the end of September and then complete the rest of the park by the end of October. Portland Parks and Recreation would like to thank again the Moyer family and Jordan Schnitzer for their civic vision and generosity, and our partners at PDC, the Portland Parks Foundation, and all of the other bureaus, nearly everyone, for their support and very hard work to make this project happen, particularly the staff at PBOT and the mayor's office for their assistance with the streetscapes. Thank you again for hosting us, and we're happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mayor, before we take questions on the council, I just want to call your attention to the exhibit attachment A that's been referred to in your packets, which was put together for this discussion, which is just a partial history of the development. And I want to call the public's attention to the fact that it is really a big deal when we create a new park. And in fact, it takes an enormous amount of time and energy and planning and public-private partnership. And we are currently in our 11th year of working on this park. So if you just want to put that in context, this is a vision that goes back a long time. My predecessor, Commissioner Saltzman, was particularly important to the shaping of the vision. The scope of work has changed over time to respond to community needs and desires. And I think we are on the verge of christening and inaugurating a new park, which will be a tremendous asset for our community and for the downtown area. But I want to thank everyone who, for the last 11 years, has been working on this. And today, what we're focusing your attention on is a couple of the legal details that we have to get right and the operating and maintenance budget going forward. So with that, I turn it over to you, Mayor, for questions.
Any discussion from council?
I have a question about the resolution that we're voting on today in terms of making a general fund allocation to transportation to replace the parking spaces. Can you tell me about the parking spaces and why we're replacing that revenue from the general fund?
So, Sue, do you have someone from your team who's also available?
Right here.
Why doesn't she come forward so we can supplement whatever information Eileen gives?
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I'm Catherine Levine. I'm project manager with Portland Transportation. As the park design and enhanced streetscape developed, the design included proposals to remove and reduce on-street parking and on-street parking revenue. At the time the design was progressing, the expectation was that it could be in the neighborhood of $40,000 a year. By the time the design was completed and a final count was made, 15 metered spaces were removed, and the estimated annual revenue from that is $27,270. The proposal before you today includes language that would replace those dollars and make the PDOT budget whole.
But don't I understand that there's a 677-space parking garage underneath this park?
I believe there is a privately owned parking garage.
Why aren't we asking for the shortfall to be made up with the private from the private parking revenues?
That's a wonderful idea. I was not privy to the initial discussions and development related to that, and I'm not sure that at the time the site was developed, there was the expectation or belief that there would be sufficient funding available to do the enhanced streetscape. There was certainly always the desire to, but when we saw this project initially for street improvements, for example, it did not include the enhanced streetscape. It included the park site out to what would normally be the curb line.
So this issue has come up before in terms of design changes causing impacts for ongoing operations and maintenance, and we're not going to resolve it in this, and this has been coming down the pike for a long time. I'm concerned, though, that the cost of the park tripled, the cost of operations and maintenance tripled, and at no point, I'd like to know, did you come back to council and say it looks like the operations and maintenance and the impacts on parking revenues are going to be changed, and do you still want to go ahead with this?
I can respond to that. We did not bring back updated estimates from the initial one because we hadn't gotten to a point where things had stabilized enough where we could calculate a new number until really just this past spring. So we recognize that, you know, it creates a problem to have it at this late date, and we are looking at how we can try to keep people apprised, OMF as well as the council, as things change, even though they're not set in stone, because really until the design process is complete, it's very difficult to start to estimate what the O&M costs are going to be.
I will say, though, and this, you know, a lot of this predates you and I, Amanda, but right. I will tell you, in my investigation, there were, you had enormous number of community stakeholders involved, and the mm-hmm. scope of the work that changed, we have PDC involved and the city, when the scope of the work changed throughout this process, this was in response to in connection with a community process, brokered primarily by PDC, but with the city's engagement. And there may be, I think you and I both agree, there may be some other ways we can do some consultative. We can get the consultative piece with council tightened to keep people abreast. But this was a transparent public process in terms of the changing scope of work. I would have a different view of this if this was a quote-unquote cost overrun issue. Cost overrun is where we say we can deliver something. And let's use an example, Elizabeth Carruthers Park. I'm going to go out on a limb. We've put out there a figure. We have a construction schedule. I'm going to predict we come in on time and under budget. If that doubled in cost, that would be a quote-unquote cost overrun because there's been no change in the scope of work. In this instance, there were numerous changes in the scope of work in response to concerns raised by property owners, businesses, PDC, stakeholders, and the project grew. Mm-hmm. What gives me a little more comfort, again, in this case, is that when you look at the overall price tag for this project, we are still looking at 60% of the cost, not on the O&M side, but on the capital side, and the acquisition being borne by the private sector. That is a phenomenal ratio for any of our parks projects. But your point as to how we communicate with council about changes in scope of work and the potential budget impacts, you have an ally in me in finding ways that we can strengthen that consultative process and give the council, in effect, an opportunity earlier in the pipeline to raise an objection if they so choose.
I appreciate that, Commissioner Fish, and I'd like to get formalized a process whereby design changes are reviewed for their cost effectiveness and their impact on the ongoing budget. This happened also in the Saturday Market area of the waterfront, where because the community wanted particular design features, it became more expensive both in capital costs and operations and maintenance. And yet in the project that I've been involved in with the Holly Farm Park, which took 12 years to get done and 30 years of waiting for a park in West Portland Park, we were told quite clearly, no, you can't have a water feature because it's too expensive to maintain, and so that's off the table. So I want to have some consistency in recognizing that choices that certainly communities want, and every one of the projects that comes to council has wonderful features, and in isolation you would say, absolutely, let's go for it. But we don't have an unlimited amount of budget, and so now we're going to be committing over $500,000 in general fund money to operations and maintenance and to the transportation payback. And in a short time, the donations that we achieved on the capital construction costs are then not covered by the ongoing operations and maintenance. So I realize that this all happened before you became into office, and I recognize.
No, but I don't say that to pass the buck, because I feel very confident in justifying what happened prior to my becoming the commissioner. Your point about a consultative process, I think, is well taken. I think the other thing the public needs to understand is that the mix of funding sources for this project, public and private, the bulk of the public sources were TIF. This was tax increment financing dollars. Those would not be available for parks outside of urban renewal districts citywide. And so that gave us an extra tool here that we wouldn't necessarily have. But to your point, we got a state ruling recently that said we can't have shallow pools in our parks. We can't have those wading pools because of some health code issue, and it's going to cost us about $100,000 a pop to turn those into water features and continue to provide something for children. That's an unanticipated capital cost we're going to have to find a way to cover.
Really?
We'll be coming back to you with some creative ideas about how we can do that.
We'd like... Waiting pools are out.
The pools that, I'll give you an example, in Lentz Park, right. There's a one of these, and it's and there's one in Montevilla Park. And they're about, you know, a couple inches of water, and they're hugely popular. This is like LT2. First, we're told we have to treat our water this pristine, and now we're told we can't have these wading pools because of some abstract health concern that hasn't actually materialized in our community.
I didn't know that. So, other discussion?
Well, just to return to the issues on the table today, it's $500,000 in ongoing general fund money that is coming in between budgets, and without a discussion or a capacity.